Welcome to Head Start, the podcast for race directors and the business of putting on races. What's in a brand? Is it the slick logo with the matching color palette and catchy tagline? Is it your organization's mission statement and your event's core values? Or is it every single thing that makes your event a memorable experience for your participants on race day? Well, according to my guest today, event branding expert Peter Abraham, your brand is all of the above and a whole lot more. It is the heart and soul of your event and what it aspires to be for your team, your participants, your stakeholders, and the rest of the world. And at a practical level, your brand is the North Star in every decision you make about your event, from your logo and the contents of your swag bag, to your choice of sponsors and the design of your race course. In today's episode, we have a lot of unpacking to do. We're going to be looking at understanding what your event's brand is and how you can develop it. We're going to be discussing your organization's mission statement and how to come up with one if you don't have one already. And we're going to be tying all that back to laying out your marketing plan and finding your event's unique voice. Before we go into all that, though, I want to give a quick shout out to our podcast sponsor, RunSignUp, the leading all-in-one technology solution for endurance and fundraising events. More than 25,000 in-person, virtual, and hybrid events use RunSignUp's free and integrated solution to save time, grow their events, and raise more. Many thanks to RunSignUp for supporting great free content for race directors. And if you'd like to learn more about how RunSignUp's industry-leading race technology can take your event to the next level, make sure to visit runsignup.com. That's runsignup.com. Okay, now let's get into this amazing episode. Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Panos. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on. Where exactly are you based in California?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay, lovely. So, Peter, tell our listeners a little bit about you. I know you've done a great deal of things in the industry. You've worked with some great brands and events. Tell our listeners a little bit about your background and the kinds of things you've done in this space.
So, you know, I've always been in marketing in some form or another. I started producing television commercials and some movies after college, but I had always been an outdoor athlete, a bicycle racer, a runner, a triathlete, and I had a deep love for endurance sports. And after the dot-com meltdown in the early 2000s, I kind of decided I wanted to be, rather than just a producer, but an actual marketing person and a chief marketing officer. And I needed something to kind of show that I could do that. So I started my own running event in Santa Monica. That grew pretty big, pretty quickly. And I got Red Bull and Nike as sponsors. And so I just started going in and learning from them. Every week, I'd go into their offices. And then I was able to sell that event to the Los Angeles Marathon and become the chief marketing officer there at a time when the LA Marathon had just been purchased. It was near bankruptcy. We had to rebuild it from zero. And I took a lot of the ideas from my own running event and took them to the LA Marathon. And we built it up bigger than it had ever been. And then for the last 10 years, I have just been a consultant basically on my own, working with not only running and cycling events, but also with all kinds of different brands, including Nike and Lululemon, Best Buy and Amazon, on various marketing initiatives. I've sort of worked in every area of marketing, so I can work on the full life cycle of marketing, from strategy through creating a marketing plan, through execution and content creation.
Awesome. And from what I can gather from your Facebook feed, you're also a keen cyclist. Are you a fellow canyon rider?
Yeah, I am a keen cyclist. I have been my whole life, and I have done a lot of work with Canyon Bicycles, which is based in Germany, but opened an office in the United States in 2017. I mean, it's really the world's first direct-to-consumer bicycle brand, and they've done an incredible job. They proved the model that you can sell bikes without selling to bike shops. Yeah, so I do a lot of work with them on strategy and content creation.
Yeah, and they are an amazing brand. I bought my first Canyon maybe 5 years ago now, and I remember it coming through the post and everything and having to assemble it. It was a great moment. Amazing bikes. Yes. Amazing brand.
Yes.
Since we're going to be going into brands and stuff, what an amazing brand also, like, I feel. Without actually knowing anything about brands, I feel like I need to say that, right?
Yeah.
So that's I guess how brands work.
They've done a great job.
Okay, so today we're going to be talking about brands and branding. and mission statements, which I've seen you discuss in many of your past talks. You feel very strongly about the importance of mission statements that we're going to be getting into. I have to say that on today's topic, more than any other topic, I feel even more ignorant than usual. So you may have to hold my hand a little bit. I can sort of like guess that lots of people would be perplexed by the idea of branding. So why don't we get into it? Starting with the basics, why don't you just give us the definition of what a brand is for you? So like what goes into it? What makes it up? Are we talking like just a logo or like what exactly goes into the brand?
Okay, well, that's a great question, Panos, and I get asked that a lot. And I would say a brand is the sum total of all the different touch points for that brand, okay, which now are there, like you think of a brand like Nike, there are thousands of touch points. It's not only the product, it's their retail stores, it's their advertising, it's the athletes they sponsor, it's how they speak to their employees, it's their buildings at their headquarters. I mean, it's all of that. It's their apps. You know, I came up in an era of advertising, like in the 90s when I was making television commercials, where honestly, a brand didn't have that many touch points. Like advertising really was it. There was like television, print, radio, maybe billboards, maybe they were in a store. There just weren't that many touch points for a brand. And now there's so many different places where a consumer interacts with a brand. You think of a brand like Starbucks, it's the cup. It's the person behind the counter. It's the sign on the store. It's the advertising. It's the coffee. Is it good? It's like there's so many different things. And so that's number one. There's no one thing that makes up a brand. So when a brand says, hey, we're going to redo our logo, we're a new brand now. No, you're not really a new brand. That's one of 100 things. And so that's why a brand has to be thought of holistically. And I think what is really, really important, particularly in a world where you have hundreds of different touch points to manage, is that you need a point of view. And so when I talk about things like a mission statement, it's not having a mission statement for the sake of having a mission statement. It's you need a point of view. You need sort of an organizing principle and an angle on how you see the world and how you manage not only your customers, but your product, your employees. You got to organize that. And I think when I see brands that don't have that, you can kind of see it because you can see that they're sort of all over the place. And, you know, if you look at a brand like, let's say Apple, you know, everything Apple does feels like Apple. If you walk into the Apple store, if you see an ad, a billboard, if you look at their product, like it all kind of feels like Apple because they're so disciplined about their brand and how they show up in the world. That's basically how I describe it.
One of the questions I had thinking through this is a brand something that sort of my company or my event is, or is it more like how it's being perceived by the outside world?
Well, I think those two things are one and the same. I don't think you can separate. Like, I don't think you can say, hey, I am one thing, but it's perceived as a different thing. I think perception is reality. I think those two things go together, and I don't think they're two separate things. And so, and I think all these things, like I'm talking about Starbucks, Nike, Apple, that also applies even to a very small, like let's say a running event, like a 5K. What's your point of view? Why should I sign up for your event? How are your shirts designed? How was the course designed? What does your website look like? All that should be organized into so it feels like it's coming from a single point of view rather than just sort of all over the map. Or, you know, what I see with running events is a lot of them just looking at other running events and doing what somebody else did. Oh, they use a photo of somebody coming across the finish line with their hands in the air. We should do that. And you go, yeah, but every single running event does that. Why do what everybody else is doing? And I think it's important to differentiate yourselves in the marketplace and have a unique point of view also.
Yeah, we're definitely going to be coming back to the whole idea that even a 5K can have a brand and like a substantial identity there, because I think it's important.
Yeah.
In terms of selling the idea of putting more effort into branding to race directors, how would you go about that? So basically, what would be the points that you think a race director needs to take in terms of the benefits of using branding for their event and being smarter and putting more effort into it?
Well, like I said, it's about having a point of view. And another mistake I see a lot of races kind of making is trying to be all things to all people and just sort of being generic. And I think it's far better to be the most amazing race for a smaller group of people and an amazing experience as opposed to like just an okay experience for a bunch of people. Because then what happens is you're nobody's favorite race. I'd rather start with serve a smaller group and have them just be passionate about your event being the most amazing event for them and then build from there. And, you know, when you think about building a running event, what you are is you're in the experience design business. You're designing an experience for people. And you're, you know, if you think of like just a 5K, let's say it's $40 a person. Let's say a married couple comes to your event. They're spending $80 plus maybe parking and something to eat after. That's $100 they're spending on that Sunday morning. You're competing for their dollars with maybe they could have gone out to dinner or movie the night before or to the theater, whatever it is. You need to make your experience compelling and amazing. That should be a fantastic experience for them. So I would start by thinking about, are you creating a remarkable experience for people? And when I say experience, I don't just mean on race morning. I mean, starting with the website that they might go to a month before, you know, are you clear about the parking, the results and the photos after that whole life cycle of customer touch points is what I'm talking about.
And I guess because, you know, earlier today I was looking back at the example of, so Orca Running is an event management company based in Washington. Porter Bratton, who runs that, was a guest of mine in one of the podcasts. And I sort of, you know, when I was thinking about brands, but not necessarily, you know, like Chicago Marathon level brand, you know, like more the kind of level of events that would be more like the people in the audience, I guess. That struck me because I seem to be getting from them a lot of consistency, right? They like, I feel like, you know, when Orca Running comes to mind, I know what they're about. You know, they've been very heavy, for instance, on sustainability stuff. They've taken lots of steps to offer options instead of medals. There's a service called Trees Not Tees. And, you know, Porter is a big advocate for sustainability. So beyond just the website and the logo and the experience, do you also include these kinds of things like communications and how the event conducts itself as part of the brand of the event?
Yeah, absolutely. That's critical. I mean, how you write your emails, the photography you use, all of those different things are really important. And you brought up a very important point, which is consistency. Like, I think people want some consistency from their brand. So it's not only a point of view, but they want to know that you're repeatedly bringing that point of view in everything you do. And so I think consistency is a very important part of the branding process. Just like when I was talking about Starbucks or Apple or Nike, they're very consistent in any communications they do, the signage, whatever it is, the product, it's very consistent. And I think that is important. People want that.
Are there any events just to sort of like make it a little bit more concrete for people whose brands you really admire and what they've achieved or something that, you know, you can hold up as an example for people to look up to in the events world, in the races world?
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of consistency, you can look at Ironman Triathlon, which you really just know what you're getting there. You know, it's incredibly consistent, not only in the distance, whether it's a 70.3 or a Ironman distance, the websites they use, the results, even a lot of the athletes, like super consistent. I think events like the Chicago Marathon and the New York Marathon, I mean, they're massive and their courses are amazing because they have a monopoly on their cities. Like, there's no other marathon that goes through the streets of New York City. And that is a unique and amazing experience. I think those marathons, in terms of their communication, I think is like fine, but I don't think it's anything special. I think in some ways, it's almost a negative that they have a monopoly because they don't have to be maybe as good as a smaller event that is a challenger event that's trying to get better. I think in the early days of the Rock and Roll Marathon, I thought that was this, and I'm going back like 12, 15 years now, that was a unique event. The Rock, there was no other marathon that had branded itself around music and had bands all over the course. Like, I thought that was interesting. I think they lost their consumer experience after that. And it became just sort of a commodity, but it was different. And I always respect, events that, you know, are taking a chance and trying to be different, you know, because if you think about like a 5K or a 10K, that's kind of a commodity now. Like in a place like Los Angeles, there are like five of those every weekend, all year long. So what is it that is different about your event? And I think brands really need to think about, is it your course different? Is there a theme that is different? Is there like, is it a costume thing? Like if you remember, I think it's almost gone now, but there was a thing called the Color Run.
Oh yeah. No, it's still around.
I guess it's still around. I did one once, you know, and I don't think it was that amazing of an experience, but it was different. There was nobody else doing anything like that. And so I do give that to them.
Right. So basically, I mean, yeah, you keep mentioning this idea of being different, of having a unique voice and an identity and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm guessing we're saying be different, but don't just be different for the sake of it. I think you also said that earlier, right? Just be different for a reason.
Yeah. And I would say like, and again, like I would step back and go like, what problem are you solving for a runner? Like, what does a runner want? Like if you look at the New York Marathon, the problem that they're solving for a runner is you want to run a marathon through the streets of New York City on closed streets with 2 million spectators. That's the only chance you ever get to do that. And so, and that is a, having done it, there's no other experience like that in the world. And so I think, you know, to just start like a generic 5K with an unremarkable course, with unremarkable marketing, with unremarkable, you know, t-shirt and photos, like you're really not solving a problem for an athlete because they can get that anywhere else all year long. So I would think about like people want compelling and remarkable experiences. And how do you give that to them?
You have, I think, more than other people in the industry, a much broader view of the world because you work outside the industry, but you've also worked within the industry. Would you rate the sort of like the branding standards within races and our community higher or lower than your average event or your average brand or company out there? Are we doing a better job, a worse job, or just average like everyone else?
I don't think it's fair to try and rate running in relation to other businesses. It's hard to say, but here's what I'll say. What I love about endurance sports generally, when you're talking about running, cycling, triathlon, those businesses, whether it's you know, running shoes or running events or bicycles, is a lot of people have come from, they've been in that their whole lives. Like in running, you look at, there's somebody who maybe they were a competitive runner in high school, then in college, then they graduated and worked for Brooks or New Balance or Nike for a few years. And then their friends started an event. So they started a running event and they have been in the running space their whole careers. What is great about that is they're in running or running events because they're passionate and they love that. And I think that is awesome. The downside of that is maybe they haven't gotten to get outside of running and see the world and go like do a tour of duty working for, I don't know, Nike, Red Bull, who knows, other brands, or Major League Baseball, other events, other businesses, which I think is really valuable. And I would highly recommend that in people's career paths that they, and that doesn't only go for marketing, it goes for somebody who is an operations person, which is obviously such an incredibly important part of the running event experience, is operations. And I'm speaking as somebody who's not an operations person. Like 1 year at my event, we mismarked the turnaround for the 5K and it became like an 8K because it was too far. And everybody had a terrible experience in the 5K. And like, that's part of your marketing. Like, you got to have your ops together. So the operations are critically important. But I do think it is important to have some kind of outside point of view and because, and really see what some of the top brands are doing in terms of marketing and content. I think that it's important.
My question, by the way, was sort of motivated more from the point of view of you may have seen stats that basically running has some difficulty attracting younger audiences. You know, it's been like, if you look at statistics of people who run, it tends to sort of like be drifting towards older and older ages, right? I mean, it's the people who started running. And so the races and the industry seems to have some issues with attracting younger runners, the kinds of things that maybe Colorun that you mentioned earlier and other events tried to do. So my question was more motivated from the point of view of, is there something we could do from a branding point of view, both at the event level and at the industry level, to basically rejuvenate the industry and grab the attention and the imagination of younger runners?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I have spent a lot of time studying this and doing some work on it. Like here in LA, where I see the younger runners is not out at 5Ks and 10Ks. I see them in the night run crews. So we have Blacklist, we have Koreatown Run Club. I just sent somebody there last night who's 25 years old. Downtown LA runners. There are a bunch of night run crews that run at night. There's also November Project, which is in 50 cities around the world that I go to here in LA, which I'm a huge fan of. In all those things, like the night run crews, November Project, I would say the average age is like 27 or 28. Those are essentially free community fitness. What I hear when I walk around those events, and a lot of those people are really fast runners. They're the runners that you would want if you had a 5K or 10K or half marathon here. And what I'm hearing from them is cost is an issue for them. They're like, I can't afford to pay $45 for a 5K twice a month. And I'm hearing that social is really important. A lot of these run crews and November Project, they operate a lot on digital, like Instagram is often the hub of these groups. And they're really about social. They're at night. In some cases, it's about going to see art around the city. I think they just have a very different point of view. And I think the 5Ks and 10Ks of the world could learn a lot from them about attracting young people. Cost is one thing. Why do all the events have to be at 7 in the morning? Why couldn't you do one at night? You know, Blacklist LA, their biggest event of the week, they have runs probably 5 days a week, is Monday night at 10 p.m. downtown. Not even a running area, really. It's packed. Hundreds of people show up because it feels like a big party. And when I go to like a marathon training group, I feel like the average age is like 60. And so I feel like for sure all race directors should be out if they're near any kind of urban area. They should be out with the night run crews and out with November Project and really kind of like just being out with that community and learning from them.
That's really interesting. I feel like we need to get together, like a few guests I have in mind, and just do an episode on just that, how we can get more younger runners into races. But for the time being, let's switch gears a bit and let's go into mission statements. You are someone that keeps pressing on this argument of the importance of having a mission statement as it pertains to branding and as it pertains like almost like a compass for everything else you do. So tell our listeners a little bit about what a mission statement is. I think many of us may have slightly confused ideas of what it should be about.
You know, the way I look at a mission statement is, as we mentioned earlier, it just gives you a point of view. And I think, you know, any good kind of business or process needs guardrails, okay? And there's both art and science into creating guardrails that is not too narrow, but not too wide. So here, I'll give you an example of a business that I've worked on that did not have guardrails, okay, and how it went. This is a few years ago. I was doing a lot of work in experiential marketing, live event stuff. And I got asked by, hey, there's a fast food chain here in the US called Taco Bell, right? Which is like, There are thousands of them, mass, mediocre Mexican food, but it's popular. It's a huge business. And I got asked to come in and do a whole brainstorming session for Taco Bell for some new experiential activation. And there were like maybe six of us in there. Each person had their own area of expertise. Somebody with great experience in digital, someone who was an architect, someone who was a designer, like, and everyone was really experienced and professional and at a very high level in their field. And I remember, like, the brief was like, hey, Taco Bell wants to do a new kind of experiential activation, and we're going to kind of work on what that might be. Okay, well, what does Taco Bell stand for? Other than, like, cheap, low-quality food, there really was no, there were no guardrails on the process. So when we're ideating, we're like, oh, maybe we should do something on college campuses. No. I know. Let's do something at music festivals. No. Could we do something at schools? Wait, I know. What about if we, and we were just like, we had, there were no, because the brand didn't have a point of view. You had nowhere to, like, you just didn't have anywhere to anchor yourself in terms of what they should do. So when you don't have guardrails in anything that you're doing, whether it's a running event or a food brand, you just don't know where to start. And we ended up not coming up with anything good. We couldn't come up with one great idea, and there was no idea that they went with after that. Okay. So, you know, here, I'll give you a company. How about like Patagonia? Okay. You know, Patagonia is about sustainability. Okay. Their original mission statement was, make the best product. Then they changed it to make the best product and do no harm. And then recently, 2 years ago, they updated it again that said, we're in business to save the planet. So, number one, your point of view and your mission statement can evolve with your business. But theirs has, for the most part, has been starting with make the best product. Like, you do have to have a great product, but it's really been all about sustainability. So imagine if we were doing some kind of ideation session to try and build a marketing campaign for Patagonia, you immediately know that it's got to be built around sustainability, because that's what the whole company stands for. So it focuses your energy and what you're doing, and it becomes so much more effective. That's an example of how a mission statement is a strategic tool that helps you be better at what you do. Do you want me to give you an example of how that would work in a running event?
Yes, please.
LA Marathon, we took over. It had been, when we took over in 2008, it had been sort of left for dead. It was almost gone. It was almost in bankruptcy. We decided we really needed, just to start with, let's come up with a mission statement. So Russ Piller, the president, and I would go every Friday afternoon to his house and just start working through, like, what would our mission statement be? And where we ended up was, we inspire athletes and we connect communities. And that came over everything. So then it was like, well, we need a new route for the marathon, because the route they were using was terrible. So we decided to start at Dodger Stadium, which is near downtown, go through downtown, through all the landmarks of Los Angeles, Hollywood Boulevard, Sunset Strip, Rodeo Drive, and end at the Santa Monica Pier, one way across the whole city by all the landmarks. And you could go, hey, that will inspire athletes and that will connect all these communities of LA. So already just the route was living up to the mission statement. And everything we did, we would first go, wait, does that match the mission statement? Does it inspire athletes and connect communities? And that's how we used it. The shirts, the expo, everything had to live up to the mission statement first.
That's an interesting example, because listening to that, me not being like a professional or particularly imaginative in this field, I would have said, you know, okay, inspire athletes and connect communities. I guess, you know, like, most events are trying to do that. What am I going to do with just that one liner? And then you say, you know, you come to making decisions about the event, creating the route and other things, and you just go back to that, right? And that's sort of like your reference in everything you do.
Yes, exactly. And you can go, well, that sounds kind of generic, but it's not. We actually wrote it down. That was absolutely, you know, the graphic design, the logo that we designed at the time looked like a route map. So it looked like a route map that would connect communities. And in terms of inspiring athletes, like, we felt like the shirts and the apparel we made had to be of a high quality. It had to inspire people. Here's another example. The operations team came to me and they said, hey, Peter, we're thinking, in the past, we've done goodie bags for all the participants and all the volunteers as well. Should we do goodie bags this year? I'm like, well, what's in them? They said, well, first of all, we're going to have to do about 40,000 plastic bags. And then what? I'm like, well, what's in them? oh, some just coupons for $20 off this, $5 off that. I'm like, is there anything of value really in the bags? Not really, but we get a few brand partners who give us a few thousand dollars total to put their coupons in the bags. I'm like, okay, wait, does that inspire anybody? No, it's a bag of junk, basically. And then you just look at the environmental issues of 40,000 plastic bags. That's horrible. So does that connect communities or inspire athletes? It does not. And so we said, forget it. Let's just not do goodie bags at all. And it was fine. We never got one complaint about it. And that we explicitly used our mission statement to decide whether we should do them or not.
When it comes to branding, there's two things you need to always keep in mind. Number one, owning it. And number two, being consistent with it across all your customer touchpoints. Peter, in fact, stressed that quite strongly earlier in our discussion. So how do you achieve brand ownership and consistency without going completely overboard? The answer is custom race websites and integrated email marketing, both free and awesomely easy to set up on Run Signup. With Run Signup's custom race websites, you're getting an amazing, professionally designed website that matches your brand from logo to color palette. You get to use your own domain name to further build out your brand identity, and you get to easily add any number of pages to your website, from donation pages to searchable participant photo galleries. Do you then want to carry over that nice, polished branding you achieved on your website to your emails? No problem. Run Signup's integrated email marketing takes over and will automatically pull your logo and brand colors from your website and apply them to all your email templates, making it easier for you to pull in additional images and other brand assets into your email designs. Best of all, Run Signup will never promote another brand or event on your race website or emails, ever. No ads, no competing results, nothing. Just your brand and your brand alone on your event website. So, to learn more about Run Signup's free custom websites and integrated email marketing, head over to runsignup.com. That's runsignup.com. You can really achieve a great professional look for your brand in minutes. Okay, now let's rejoin the discussion on brand building with branding expert Peter Abraham. Next up, coming up with your event's robust mission statement. Speaking of mission statements, other things come to my mind, things like, you know, you'll hear brands or companies speak of their values, right? So these are our values. And you also know that, you know, companies and many products have taglines and little mottos that sort of sound a little bit to me like maybe a mission statement. Are all of those things basically the same, or is the mission statement something different to like a company's values or its tagline or its motto or all of that little, you know, like bite-sized chunks that it markets with?
Okay, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. So number one, talking about values. Values are supporting information that can come under the mission statement. So think about the website. You'd have the mission statement, and then you'd have, here are our five whatever core values, you know, we believe in transparency, whatever it is, which is great. It just sort of adds more depth to your point of view. And I like brands that can be a little bit maybe eccentric with their values. Like if you look at Zappos shoes, Zappos, which was bought by Amazon, but has kept their point of view, which is like, one of their core values is keep things a little weird, which I like that. Like and if I've been and toured their headquarters and stuff, and definitely like it feels quirky and doesn't feel like anywhere else. So your core values can add support underneath your mission statement. You need a mission statement first. You start there and you can add more detail with core values. You don't have to have them, but it's a great idea. Now let's talk about a tagline. That's very important. Because a lot of people get a tagline and a mission statement confused. They think they're one and the same. A mission statement is something that really doesn't change. I mean, you might update it once every 5 years or whatever, but basically that is like the gospel of your business. Okay, a tagline could change month to month, year to year. So let's look at Nike. Nike's mission statement is essentially inspiring athletes with technology. Okay, that's basically their mission statement if you boil it down. Their tagline could be just do it or who knows what, all kinds of other things, depending on the campaign or whether it's for basketball or football or running. So a tagline is a more temporary advertising hook, you know, like a, that you put into a brand. And honestly, I think taglines have lost, you know, in the days that where I came up in advertising in the 90s, like just do it was, man, that was what you heard from Nike for a whole year. Now a tagline is something like, it would be a hash, just do it now would be like a hashtag in an Instagram post. It just wouldn't be as ever present as it used to be. But the point is, a tagline is a short piece of communication in advertising and not the guardrails for your whole brand that a mission statement is.
I'm seeing sort of like this pattern emerge where we're saying tagline is more like an outward looking thing, you know, like something I use for my marketing. I sell my, whereas like the mission statement is like an inward, like is who I am. It's sort of like what I'm made of kind of thing, right?
Right. And I want to add one more thing about a mission statement, because you brought up sort of outward facing versus inward facing. That's an important distinction. And one of the things I've learned about in decades of working with mission statements and brands is that the mission statement is as important, maybe more important for your own employees as it is for your customers. Because your employees, your staff, your team, they want to know what you stand for and what's it all about here. So let me tell you, like at the LA Marathon, not only did we use the mission statement as a way to orient ourselves with our own staff, but when we would go to a meeting with the Beverly Hills City Council or any city government in Hollywood, Los Angeles, about the route, the first thing we would lead with when we'd meet with city government, like when we're trying to get permission to go down Hollywood Boulevard, is I'd walk in and I would start with, okay, here's what we're about. We're about inspiring athletes and connecting communities. And then I would give an example of that. I'd say, let me give you an example of how we connect communities. We've got 3,000 kids and students around LA who are mostly below the poverty line. They're middle school and high school kids, 13 to 18 years old. 3,000 of them, we give a free entry to the marathon. They train for 6 months. They run the full LA marathon, 26.2 miles. Of those kids who finish, 92% go to college. That's what we stand for. Do you want to be a part of that or not? And like, it was really hard for city government to say no to that kind of point of view and backing it up with those kind of statistics. And so the mission statement can be used as a tool. It's not just for like your ads for customers. It can be used, you know, with brand partners and sponsors, with city governments, with employees. Like, you can use it in so many ways.
And in terms of the practicalities and best practices around mission statements, are there any rules as to how long a mission statement should be? And also, are there, very importantly, any guidelines as to, you know, how do I sit down and brainstorm and create a mission statement?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So yes, yes, and yes. A good mission statement contains two things, in my opinion: what you do and how you do it. So Nike, we inspire athletes. That's what they do. How do they do it? With technology. Okay, so in terms of a guardrail, that allows them to, it doesn't say inspiring athletes with shoes or with apparel. It says technology. So that gives them license to create apps, to be leaders in design, because that's part of technology, you know, experimenting with different fabrics, whatever it is. But it's always grounded in athletes. So it's tied to sports. So I think it's the two things: what you do and how you do it. Now, how do you create the mission statement? Here's the process that I recommend. And I'm involved with this with a startup right now. You start by, I recommend writing down a bunch of words that come to mind that associate with your brand. So let's say you've got a 10K, 5K, 10K running event. And you get in a room with some of your key people, get a whiteboard, or you can use sticky pads that you can stick on the wall. Or if you're virtual, because we're in a pandemic, you can use, there's a great app called Miro, M-I-R-O, like a virtual whiteboard. And you start putting words up. And I recommend, like, okay, well, you know, running would be like inspiration, community, endorphins, athletics, whatever it is, achievement. And so you spend like 15, 20 minutes on that. Then you take that and you start forming those into basic mission statements, like come up with 5 or 10 of them that just like use some of those words. And some will be too long or too short. Like, you know, at the LA Marathon, we had this idea of inspiring athletes and connecting communities. But our first pass, like when we thought we had it, was using the transformational power of sport, we inspire athletes and connect communities. And I remember we had a meeting right after we came up with that. Like the next day, we're like, that's it. And the next day we had a meeting with Anita DeFrance, who is on the International Olympic Committee and lives in Los Angeles. And she said, so what are you guys about? And we gave her that mission statement, you know, using the transformational power of sport, we inspire athletes and connect communities. And she's like, wow, that's a mouthful. And I was like, oh gosh, it's too long. So we went home and we cut it short. So the point is, it's an iterative process that takes time to get down. And I will say it is tremendously important that the mission statement is short and to the point, because otherwise nobody can remember it. And if nobody can remember it, then it'll never get used. And like, why bother? So it really, that wordsmithing, getting it down short is important. So let's say you've come up with a bunch of words. Now you've started to string them together into some sentences that sort of feel right. And then I recommend, like, say that's an hour or two process to get to that. I recommend taking a break for a couple of days and then come back and revisit it and start shortening things and think about it. And then maybe come back one more time. It does take work to wordsmith it down to like a really, really concise statement. But when you get it right, it's really important.
Right. Okay. So let's assume that I do follow that process. I think it's a lot clearer now that we've gone through some examples and also sort of like the theory of it, of how to come up with it. So let's assume that I have come up with my mission statement. What do I do with it? So in terms of, you know, like re-examining my brand and developing my brand further, how can the mission statement inform and help through that process?
Okay. So here are the places that I use it. Okay, number one, it's not a like we talked about, it's not a tagline that has to be everywhere in your communications, but you're not hiding it either. So I usually have it on the About Us page on the website. Okay, number one. Number two, whenever I'm, let's say you need to design a logo for your event, I start the brief for the designer with the mission statement and maybe the core values, because anything you do, you want to reflect that mission statement, whatever the point of view is. So whether it's designing a logo, your route, does the route, your running route reflect that? And I want to just take a minute to say that for running events, the route is like the core of your event. If you do not have an exciting and interesting route for your 5K, 10K, your event is always going to be limited. And that it's, I think, maybe the most important part of your race. And so does your running route live up to your mission statement? You know, like designing all the signage, does the signage reflect that? Do the bibs, your apparel, the shirts, the website, all those things. So anybody who is designing all that, you start with like sharing with them the mission statement so they get your point of view. And what starts happening is all of a sudden, all your assets, the banners, the signs, the t-shirts, the website, the photography, all of a sudden it starts like feeling like it's part of the same event rather than just random things all over. And that's when you get consistency. And that's when your brand really, through repetition, your brand starts really coming through to people and they get it. So
would it also be helpful to look towards my mission statement for me to decide, for instance, what social media I should be investing my time in, you know, whether I should be on TikTok or Facebook or Instagram or whatever? Like, can the mission statement also say something about that?
It can. And I think it's not necessarily about which channels you'd use. Like, should I be using TikTok or Instagram? but it tells you how you show up on those because the channels can change from year to year. You know, 5 years ago, TikTok didn't exist. You wouldn't have done that. Now it's a huge thing. And what I would say is it helps explain how you would show up on those channels. And I think as an aside, you know, there's so many different channels that are available to us as marketers, and particularly like, you know, a running event or triathlon or cycling event just doesn't have the resources that Nike or Starbucks would to execute across all of them. So I think it's better to do fewer channels, but do a really good job on them than trying to like TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, like there's so many. And I think it's better to just sort of limit, but really execute, do a really good job and live up to your mission statement.
So we were talking actually at some point a couple of weeks ago about marketing plans as well.
Yeah.
So how do I go from my mission statement to building a concrete marketing plan? What does that even look like?
Job number one is get the mission statement done first. Okay, that's job number one. I'll get to the marketing plan in a second. What I recommend is job number two, before you actually develop the mission plan, is go out and do some customer research. And I think what I keep, the mistake I see with brands from big to small, I mean, across the board, not just running events, but even huge brands, is they think they know their customers and they think they know what problems they're solving for their customers. But in fact, they haven't really spent the time to speak to them and ask questions and learn. And so I recommend doing some customer research. Like you got a running event, find 15 or 20 runners who have done your event, and then maybe 5 runners who haven't, but you feel like they should have done it. Why didn't they do my event? They're here, they live down the street, and develop a set of like 10 or 12 questions. Do a half an hour or 45 minute Zoom call or meet in person for coffee or a phone call and take them through like, you know, what's your running background? What problems do you see out there with running events? What do you think running events could do better? What could we do better? Are there any trends happening out there that we're missing? And what you start seeing after 8 or 10 people is you start hearing the same like 2 or 3 things over and over and over. And so you get through like 15, and you could do this, a running event could do this process, you know, in 2 weeks. It doesn't take a long time. And those things that keep coming up over and over, you'll get a list of 4 or 5 of those. You want to like circle those. And those are problems that need to be solved. So like, let's say what you keep hearing from people, and this is why I got into the running business. I kept going to running events. And the t-shirts were horrible. They were so bad. It was like big, heavy shirt, terrible design. And they were like, I'm like, why are they giving me this ugly shirt that I think they think I'm going to wear? And they think it's a gift and I'll go wash my car with it, maybe. So like things like that start coming up. And then those are problems you can solve within your marketing plan. So like I would start with mission statement, number one. Number two, customer research. Again, costs nothing. Okay. It's just time. And then what I have also found is by going out and interviewing and listening to a bunch of participants from your event, that's also a kind of marketing because they're like, wow, they're listening to me. They value my voice. That's great. That alone starts to change the perception of your event amongst your customers. And I would also include some industry people, and maybe a couple of your sponsors in the interviews, and some of your staff or all of your staff. And then start your marketing plan. Let's say it's you've just had the event a month ago or 2 months ago. You have, I'm going to say, let's say you have a few months until the next event. And then go, okay, or maybe longer. If it's an annual, like a marathon, maybe you have 10 months till the next event. And then you go, okay, so let's talk about our marketing plan. What are we going to do and how are we going to do it? What, you know, and you can start with, let's start by solving the problems that customers have. And by the way, some of them might be operational things. It might be, you know, why are there no mile markers on your course? Why are there no corrals in the start? I got stuck behind a bunch of slow people, you know, and it slowed my time. Whatever. There are all kinds of things. Start by solving the problems, okay? Because those are the most important things. And then start by thinking about like, you know, with a marketing plan, like how we have limited resources, how are we going to use those resources and how are we going to get the most ROI? Okay. And again, I want to stress that everything is marketing. What isn't marketing now? Everything is marketing. So like you can't ignore things with a running event, like the course, like all of like aid stations. Like I just did a cycling event, a gravel race. It was, this is in November. It hit 111 degrees on the longest climb of the, which was like an hour long climb. It was brutal. The aid station at the top was staffed by some kids from UCLA who, you know, I can't blame them, but they ran out of water. It was 111 and it wasn't, we weren't in a city. It was another half an hour till you could get to like a drinking fountain somewhere. They ran out of water. They were dismissive about it. Like, I'll never do that again. I talked to the race director after. He was like, oh, yeah, no big deal. I was like, no, it's a big deal. My friend that I was with had heat exhaustion symptoms for 2 or 3 days after, nearly had to go to the hospital. So I will never do that event again. The event, to me, is poorly run because not only did they run out of water, but they were dismissive about it, didn't even think it was a big deal. So that you can't ignore operations as marketing. Okay. You can't ignore, you know, like getting people's photos out. Do you have free photos? Or do you have to pay for them? Are they high quality? Getting results on the results page on the website. Like one of the things that makes me crazy is so many races make it so hard to find photos and results on their website after. And I think the website is its own category of marketing. And the mistake so many races make, and this is something I work on very closely with events, is they think they should just have one website before, during, and after. And the event should change, the website should change. Like before the event, you're optimizing for like runner registration, right? Like a link to run sign up, whatever. Then, like the day before the event, it's more like final instructions, packet pickup, parking, that kind of thing. Race day, you switch over to like maybe photos of the race. Then it's results starting right after the, and that should be like number one button, like starting 5 minutes after the race ends, front and center on the homepage should be results here. And then as soon as you get photos, maybe the day after, that should be up there as well. And so I just think like, again, solving those problems, you know, is probably more important than like, hey, are we going to do TikTok or not? And I you should think about TikTok, but just make sure you don't forget about solving those important problems. And that comes from all the research. Then once you kind of get a list of like, here's what we're going to do for marketing. We have so many resources. We'll do TikTok and Instagram. We're going to solve these five problems. The finish line wasn't good. The expo needs to be better. We need better shirts, da, 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 da. Okay. How are we going to communicate that? And then what I recommend is doing just a basic Google Doc in Google Sheets. And you have down the left side, you have, let's say the different channels, website, race communication, email marketing, TikTok, Instagram, things like that. Okay. Across the top, you have time. Like you could have it by week. Okay. Week one, week two, or take a month, January divided into 4 weeks, whatever. And then you can say what you're doing. So website, okay? Month before the event, it looks one way. A week before the event, it changes to like final instructions and packet pickup. A day before the event, parking. The day after the event, photos and results. So you set up a timeline for each channel, right? And then you've got to figure out like, okay, TikTok, let's say is a channel, like, who's going to shoot the videos? Who's going to do it? Who's going to be in them? Who, you know, who's going to edit them? You know, all that kind of stuff. Then you have to figure out how you're executing each one and assign a budget to it. Instagram. God, we need great photos, right? And I think like Instagram is a really powerful tool. I think it's consistently underutilized by running events because A, they don't have a point of view, and B, they're not really getting high quality photos and videos on Instagram that are really inspiring.
So in terms of the example that you were mentioning earlier, for instance, from your own experience of, you know, receiving a crappy t-shirt, for instance, you know, that being a problem you've identified with races. If I am a race director and I get some feedback that I'm a runner, I keep receiving crappy t-shirts and I don't like that, how do you go from that customer feedback to an actual marketing campaign, to actually, you know, doing something with that?
So what I recommend in setting up a marketing campaign is to highlight the great runner experiences you have. And I think for a running event, I think the runner experience is everything. Okay, that's the course, that's the t-shirts, that's photography, that's website, that's operations. And I believe that you can start a marketing campaign just by highlighting the great runner experiences that are at your event. Here's an example. At the LA Marathon, we designed, as I mentioned, this great route that went from the stadium to the sea through all the highlights of LA. And I was working with a fantastic creative agency at the time in San Francisco called Division of Labor. And I asked them, I said, hey, I want to make a video about the route. How do you guys recommend I set this up? And they came back with such a great idea. They said, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to call it a landmark every mile. And you're going to shoot somebody running all along the route, all the way to the beach. You're going to shoot that. And then you're going to edit it together with historical footage in front of Rodeo Drive, Man's Chinese Theater, all these famous landmarks in LA. You're going to edit it with, like, it'll be like mile 17, Rodeo Drive, and you'll show historical footage and then this runner running by. I'm like, that is a great idea. We shot it. It was super successful. It got hundreds of thousands of views on YouTube and on the website. And really what it was doing was showing you what a great experience you were going to have on our route. You know, it was, but it was just a really nice execution of that. And I think, like, you know, with something like designing a shirt, I would recommend, like, go to great designers to help you with that. Like, you can find great designers who love running, who are talented, who will help you. And then what you do is use that in your content. Take photos of the design process, make a video about how you designed it, like do a reveal, you know, reveal parts of it over 3 days until you show the whole thing. Like, I would say really just focus on telling the story of the runner experiences in your event.
Awesome. And, you know, speaking of stories, which is it's sort of like an overarching theme in so many things. And, you know, when we talk about brand today, marketing, I did an episode with Meg Treat, who's a PR professional working with races.
Yeah.
And she said actually something amazing to me, which is that races have a bit of a head start in storytelling because they are intrinsically newsworthy and they have a story. You know, the fact that there is a course and a date and everything, you know, is the seed to telling a great story around that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think, you know, race directors need to think in terms of what are the stories around their event, not only the course, the cities they go through, or the places, or the runners who are running in their event. I helped rebuild this event, the Malibu Marathon. It's a half marathon now, but it ran all the way along the ocean. The entire race was like, I think it was like half marathon, 6 miles down, 6 miles back, virtually, you know, like just a few feet from the water. And so we built all of our kind of marketing materials, the shirt, the medal around the idea of the sun setting over the ocean, the water, the photography. You'd always shoot from an angle where you could see the runners against the ocean in the background. And that was the whole way we built the event. And even the sponsor activations, we built around, like, we're going to do the expo right here next to the water. We want to make this a really meaningful experience. You know, and another thing, I think that in terms of the storytelling is, I think the expo, for events that have an expo, I think the bar is set very low there. I think running events are happy to just have whatever brands come up and set up a table and do whatever they do. And I think events need to be more demanding. And so, like, at the Malibu half marathon, we said, listen, it's not okay for you to come and just set up a table and hand out pieces of paper. You will not be welcome here, and you cannot do that, because this expo is part of our runner experience, and we're not going to outsource that to somebody who's going to hand out pieces of paper and cheapen that experience. So we want to work together with you, and we want to push you to do something that is really meaningful for our runners. And we had every brand did some kind of very, like a whole major kind of activation for the runners within the expo. And it was great. It was just so much better. It was so much more interesting for people and more inspiring. And you're helping the brands show up in a way that they might not otherwise have. You're increasing the ROI for the brands because you make them look a lot better. But events need to push back and say no to people who just want to hand out pieces of paper.
It's funny you should mention Race Expos, because by the time our chat here goes out on the podcast, we would have released an episode with Craig Minsluff just on Race Expos. And he was telling me exactly what you said here, that, you know, when you're thinking of putting vendors into your Race Expo, think of the race experience. Think of value-added stuff. Don't just think of like money and who's going to give you a few dollars here and there, which is really interesting.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, I think we've also gone a little bit outside our guardrails, as you said there. We went a little bit outside the mission statement of this episode, but I think it's all for a good cause. These were all the questions I had. I want to thank you really very much for clearing up for us a very murky area in marketing and brand identity. I hope everyone goes away with a few ideas and a lot more clarity around this. You still help events, I guess, in this kind of area, you know, with branding?
All the time.
Awesome. Where can people find you if they want to reach out for some help with all this stuff?
My website is abrhm.com, like the short version of Abraham. I'm also on Twitter at Peter Abraham. I'm on LinkedIn. People can find me there.
Awesome. Okay, great. Peter, I want to thank you again very, very much for taking the time today. It's been mighty helpful to hear you speak about branding and mission statements and marketing plans. And I want to thank everyone listening in, and we'll see you all on our next episode.
Thanks, Panos.
I hope you enjoyed this episode on marketing psychology with my guest, event branding expert, Peter Abraham. You can find more resources on anything and everything related to race directing on our website, racedirectorshq.com. You can also share your questions about event branding, event marketing, or anything else in our Facebook group, Race Directors Hub. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe or leave us a review on your favorite player. And also check out the podcast back catalog for more great content like this. Until our next episode, take care and keep putting on amazing races.